Colin reported that the doors had been getting generally a lot grimmer down here in these lower reaches of the building. They were about 10 stories below ground level now. The air was refrigerated, and the tasteful grey Hessian wall weave had given way to brutal grey-bolted steel walls. Colin's rampant euphoria had subsided into a kind of determined cheeriness. He said that he was beginning to tire a little. It was taking all his energy to pump the slightest bonhomie whatsoever into the doors down here. Ford kicked at the door. It opened. Mixture of pleasure and pain, he muttered, always does the trick. He walked in, and Colin flew in after him. Even with the wire stuck straight into his pleasure electrode, his happiness was a nervous kind of happiness. He bobbed around a little. The room was small, grey, and humming. This was the nerve centre of the entire guide. The computer terminals that lined the grey walls were windows onto every aspect of the guide's operations. Here, on the left-hand side of the room, reports were gathered over the sub-Ethernet from field researchers in every corner of the galaxy, fed straight up into the network of sub-editors' offices, where they had all the good bits cut out by secretaries because the sub-editors were out having lunch. The remaining copy would then be shot across to the other half of the building, the other leg of the H, which was the legal department. The legal department would cut out anything that was still even remotely good from what remained and fire it back to the offices of the executive editors, who were also out to lunch. So the editor's secretaries would read it and say it was stupid and cut most of what was left. When any of the editors finally staggered in from lunch, they would exclaim, "What is this feeble crap that X," where X was the name of the field researcher in question, "has sent us from halfway across the bloody galaxy? What's the point of having somebody spending 3 whole orbital periods out in the bloody Gagrikeka mine zones with all that stuff going on out there if this load of anemic squitter is the best thing we bothered to send us? Disallow his expenses." "What should we do with the copy?" the secretary would ask. "Ah, put it out over the network. Got to have something going out there. I've got a headache. I'm going home." So the edited copy would go for one last slash and burn through the legal department and then be sent back down here, where it would be broadcast out over the sub-Ethernet for instantaneous retrieval anywhere in the galaxy. That was handled by equipment which was monitored and controlled by the terminals on the right-hand side of the room. Meanwhile, the order to disallow the researchers' expenses was relayed down to the computer terminal stuck off in the upper right-hand corner, and it was to this terminal that Ford Prefect now swiftly made his way. If you are reading this on planet Earth, then A, good luck to you. There is an awful lot of stuff you don't know anything about, but you are not alone in this. It's just that in your case, the consequences of not knowing any of this stuff are particularly terrible. But then, hey, that's just the way the cookie gets completely stomped on and obliterated. B, don't imagine you know what a computer terminal is. A computer terminal is not some clunky old television with a typewriter in front of it. It is an interface where the mind and body can connect with the universe and move bits of it about. Ford hurried over to the terminal, sat in front of it, and quickly dipped himself into its universe. It wasn't the normal universe he knew. It was a universe of densely enfolded worlds, of wild topographies, towering mountain peaks, heart-stopping ravines, of moons shattering off into seahorses, hurtful blurting crevices, silently heaving oceans, and bottomless, hurtling hooping vunts. He held still to get his bearings. He controlled his breathing, closed his eyes, and looked again. So this was where accountants spent their time. There was clearly more to them than met the eye. He looked around carefully, trying not to let it all swell and swim and overwhelm him. He didn't know his way around this universe. He didn't even know the physical laws that determined its dimensional extents or behaviours, but his instinct told him to look for the most outstanding feature he could detect and make towards it. Way off in some indistinguishable distance, was it a mile or a million or remote in his eye, was a stunning peak that overarched the sky, climbed and climbed and spread out in flowering aigrettes, agglomerates and archimandrites. He weltered towards it, hooling and thirling, and at last reached it in a meaninglessly long umpteenth of time. He clung to it, arms outspread, gripping tightly onto its roughly gnarled and pitted surface. Once he was certain that he was secure, he made the hideous mistake of looking down. While he had been weltering, hooling and thirling, the distance beneath him had not bothered him unduly, but now that he was gripping, the distance made his heart wilt and his brain bend. His fingers were white with pain and tension. His teeth were grinding and twisting against each other beyond his control. His eyes turned inwards with waves from the willowing extremities of nausea. With an immense effort of will and faith, he simply let go and pushed. He felt himself float, away, and then, counterintuitively, upwards, and upwards. He threw his shoulders back, let his arms drop, gazed upwards, and let himself be drawn loosely, higher and higher. Before long, insofar as such terms had any meaning in this virtual universe, a ledge loomed up ahead of him, on which he could grip, and onto which he could clamber. He rose, he gripped, he clambered. He panted a little. This was all a little stressful. He held tightly onto the ledge as he sat. He wasn't sure if this was to prevent himself falling down off it or rising up from it, but he needed something to grip onto as he surveyed the world in which he found himself. The whirling, turning height span him and twisted his brain in upon itself, till he found himself, eyes closed, whimpering and hugging the hideous wall of towering rock. He slowly brought his breathing back under control again. He told himself repeatedly that he was just in a graphic representation of a world, a virtual universe, a simulated reality. He could snap back out of it at any moment.